We interrupt your regularly scheduled monthly almanac episodes and bring you Andrew, alone in the pod cave. I wanted to spend some time looking back at my top 10 films of the year so far, as well as the 10 movies I'm anticipating most in Q2. That would be April through June. Let's start with my current top 10 movie watches of the year. Now take this list with a heavy grain of salt because we just got through a rough dumpuary and I don't think many of these have a chance to be anywhere near my top 25 by the end of this year. Coming in at number 10 is Self-Reliance, currently streaming on Hulu. This is the directorial debut of actor Jake Johnson, who also plays the lead role in this film. I think the movie's a cool concept, where the lead character participates in a new reality game show where he has to survive for 30 days while being hunted by all sorts of people, with the ultimate prize being $1 million. I think the movie has some dark comedic elements to it and several cameos that actually caught me by surprise, but also, it's a pretty uneven film in places, and in my opinion, the payoffs of the story didn't really affect that much, which is why it only got up to number 10. My score for Self-Reliance was a 6.5 out of 10. Coming in at number 9 on my list is Roadhouse, which is currently streaming on Prime Video. This is the Doug Liman-directed remake of the cult classic 1989 film starring Patrick Swayze, which if you're listening to this and you love movies, I'm sure you've probably seen that 80s version of Roadhouse. We all have. We all love it. It's a good time. Now, Jake Gyllenhaal steps into the lead role, and I find him to be a pretty compelling lead in anything he does, honestly. He clearly understands the assignment of the film, the tone, and he's having fun with the script. So I think Jake Gyllenhaal brings everything you expect an actor of his quality to bring to the movie. I also think the close combat action fight scenes are done really well, which isn't a surprise to me because Doug Liman did tremendous work in the Bourne films with Matt Damon in the past. So I think he brings his expertise to this film really well. Now let's get to Conor McGregor. I think that this movie is going to hinge on your enjoyment of it based on what you think of McGregor. He's either going to make it or break it for most people. For me, he didn't actually break the movie the way I thought he would. I am a huge MMA fan, but that doesn't mean I'm necessarily a huge Conor McGregor fan. I'm well past his antics at this point in life, personally. But I did find him to be an interesting, captivating villain. He's hamming it up. You know, he's clearly going over the top, but it actually kind of works in this for me. The movie itself doesn't take itself too seriously. It's pulpy, it's entertaining, and it's a pretty easy recommend to most people. It's just a casual watch. So I would say to check out Roadhouse if you have the time and on Prime Video. My score was 6.7 out of 10. At number 8, I have Driveaway Dolls, which is currently available on digital. This movie is directed by one half of the Coen brothers, Ethan Coen. You may recall Joel Coen recently did The Tragedy of Macbeth a couple of years ago solo. So the brothers have kind of gone solo. News came out last year that they're going to get back together, but at the moment they're doing some separate stuff. This movie was written by Ethan and his wife, Trisha Cook. And you can definitely get elements that there's a male and a female voice in the writing room. I do think, though, that there's a reason the Coen brothers work so well together, and that's that they each have certain skills that lend themselves to a greater whole. I think that Ethan has a little more of a chaotic approach, where Joel's a little more calculated and meticulous, and when they come together, it creates this really perfect harmony. When they do things separately, you can kind of feel the void from the other. I will say Driveaway Dolls is a horny, horny movie, which surprised me. Did not expect that going in. It kind of feels also like a distant relative in some ways to Raising Arizona, if I had to pick one Coen film that this feels most closely linked to. I loved the lead performance by Margaret Qualley. I think she's a star in the making. If you're not familiar with her work, I would recommend checking out 2022's film Sanctuary. She's great in that. It's a really small chamber piece. But much like Self-Reliance, which I had at number 10, this movie has some wildly unexpected cameos, and they kind of feel out of place to me. I wanted to get invested in the cameos. I just couldn't. This is apparently, from what I understand, the first in a trilogy of quote-unquote lesbian B-movies from Ethan Coen and his wife, Trisha Cook. I'm eager to see where they're going to go with this this trilogy. I think Driveaway Dolls was adventurous enough to make me interested in what they're going to do. And so I ultimately gave it a score of 6.8 out of 10. We get over to number 7 on my list. It's a film called Memory, which is currently available on digital. This movie is directed by Michel Franco, whose work I am completely unfamiliar with. Have never seen anything he's done before this. What got me into this movie was that Jessica Chastain plays the lead role. She's a woman who's a single mother and a social worker, and one day she runs into a man that she believes may have been involved in her past in some way as a teenager. Saying any more than that would spoil the movie, so I'll just leave it at that. The man that she does run into, though, is played by Peter Sarsgaard, and he's dealing with early onset dementia, which makes the mystery of if he is or isn't the person from her past a little muddier as an audience member. What I appreciated about Memory was that it zigged when I thought it was going to zag, and it always kept me a little off balance, which I think is a credit to the writing and the directing choices throughout. If you like mystery dramas, or if you're just a huge fan of everything that Jessica Chastain is in, I would say you can go ahead and give this one a shot. I gave Memory a 7.3 out of 10. We move up to number 6 on my list, which is Argyle, currently available on digital. Argyle is directed by Matthew Vaughn, who most people know from the Kingsman franchise, Kick-Ass, and X-Men First Class, among other things. Matthew Vaughn has a very particular directing style in terms of the aesthetic, the flair, the way he shoots his action set pieces. I am a Matthew Vaughn fan, so I definitely watch his films with a little softer review approach than I think a lot of people do. Bryce Dallas Howard does play the lead role in this. She's a novelist whose books about the spy, Agent Argyle, suddenly start to appear to come to life before her eyes. And pretty quickly into the film, she bumps into Sam Rockwell's character, who informs her that he's also a spy and he's sent to find out what the next chapter in her book's going to be so he can take down the Division, which is about as on the nose as it can be in terms of the name of an evil organization. I was 100% invested in Argyle for about the first hour, all the way up to the first big reveal and the plot twist that happens at that point, which I found believable, I found logical. It's really after this point, though, that the movie goes so far off the rails. There's plot twists left and right just for the sake of it at a certain point. And you could definitely make the case that this thing jumps the shark multiple times. However, there's enough of Vaughn's style in it for me to give it a softer grade than most, as I said already. I don't unfortunately think, though, that we're going to get the Argyle Kingsman cinematic universe crossover that Matthew Vaughn was expecting. He was hoping this movie was going to do really well and he could flesh it out. I don't think that's necessarily going to be the case, but I still had some fun with Argyle. It ended up at number 6 on my list, and I gave it a 7.4 out of 10. We get into the middle of the list with number 5, and that would be Mean Girls, which is currently available on Paramount Plus. This film was directed by Samantha Jane and Arturo Perez Jr. Now listen, 2004's Mean Girls is a classic at this point. So put aside any comparisons and just enjoy this for what it is. It's a film adaptation of a stage musical, and it's not a ripoff of the original film in any way. I actually liked how it utilized some of the exact same scenes, dialogue, settings, and wardrobe choices of the 2004 version, but it changed things when it made sense to as well. I didn't necessarily love the women who played the plastics characters as much as the 2000 version, but that's really because that original version was perfectly cast with Rachel McAdams, Lacey Chabert, and Amanda Seyfried. On the flip side, though, I did like what they did with the Janice character and the Damien character, who I think are equal to the actors from the original film in a lot of ways, so that worked out well for me. Ultimately, though, I think your mileage with this is going to depend on how much you like the songs and the musical genre in general. I thought it was a good film and something I had fun watching at the end of a long workday one night with my wife, so I gave it a score of 7.5 out of 10. Up to number 4 on the list, and I've got a film called The End We Start From, which is currently available to watch on digital. This film is a British post-apocalyptic movie directed by Mahalia Bello. Not familiar with Mahalia's work at all coming into this. I do like the post-apocalyptic genre, though, so I'm always more inclined to give things like that a go. The film takes place in London following the city being flooded, and it follows Jodie Comer's character as a woman who is trying to survive this new world with her newborn baby. I was very impressed with how much this movie distinguishes itself from most of the films in this genre. I found it less cynical, more thoughtful, and just general post-apocalyptic fare above a lot of the stuff that we've seen lately. Now, Jodie Comer is one of my favorite actresses working today, so I'm always inclined to check out what she decides to do, and I'm glad I checked this one out too, and I hope you do as well. I gave The End We Start From a 7.6 out of 10. Up to number three on my list is a film called One Life, which is currently available in theaters right now. One Life is a British biographical drama by James Hawes in his directorial debut. It stars Anthony Hopkins as a renowned British humanitarian, Sir Nicholas Winton, who worked tirelessly in the lead-up to World War II, trying to help Jewish children find safety in Czechoslovakia, which at the time was occupied by the Germans. Now, this is a story I wasn't familiar with at all, which increased how captivated I was throughout the runtime. I think it had great supporting roles being played by the likes of Helena Bonham Carter and Jonathan Pryce, who are always steady hands in the work that they do. And I would say that I could recommend this film to anyone that loves history, especially around Europe and that World War II era. I gave One Life a 7.8 out of 10. At number two on my top 10 list is Orion and the Dark, which is currently available to watch on Netflix. This is the best animated film of the year so far from DreamWorks Animation. I don't anticipate another animated film catching this for a while. I think this is a strong film that's going to hold up really well for me. I only realized after watching the movie, it was actually written by Charlie Kaufman, who, if you're familiar with his work, did Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, Being John Malkovich, and other mind-bending and respected films like that. The movie basically boils down to an 11-year-old boy named Orion, who's dealing with his fear of all sorts of things and the anxiety of being that age, which I think most people will be able to relate to instantly from this film. He eventually meets Dark, which is the physical manifestation of the thing he fears the most, and they go on a journey together to help Orion overcome what he's most afraid of. I watched this movie with my two boys, who are 6 and 4, and we had a magical time together. They loved the animation style and the story of the young boy, while I appreciated it just as much for the sophisticated storytelling that I've come to expect from Charlie Kaufman's writing. If you like animation to any degree, or have young kids that are looking for something that you can just pop on and watch for 90 minutes, this needs to be right at the top of your list. Orion in the Dark at number 2, and I gave it an 8.4 out of 10. And we get to number 1, Dune Part 2, currently available in theaters. Honestly, could there really have been anything else at number 1 for me? If you know me at all, you know this was my most anticipated movie of the year, really dating all the way back to when Dune Part 1 was released a few years ago. I love Denis Villeneuve's entire filmography, and I had no doubt this would be something I was gushing over for a long time. I think the film is larger in scope than the first part, and adds some great new characters to the story, specifically Austin Butler as Fade Reutha. He's electric in every second of screen time, and one of the things that I appreciate most is when he's not on the screen, you wish he was there, and that's the sign of a really great supporting role, in my opinion. Even at 2 hours and 45 minutes, I had a few minor nitpicks with what was cut from the film or condensed from the novel, but that's really just me being kind of one of those people, which I'm trying not to be in terms of, you know, expecting it to be exactly what the novel was. I do think Dune Part 2 deserves all the praise it's getting. It's one of the best sequels of all time already, in my opinion, and I can't wait to see how Villeneuve wraps everything up with Dune Messiah at some point over the next few years. This was a 10 out of 10 experience for me, and is easily my number one film of the year so far. Have you seen any of these movies? Do you agree or disagree? Am I missing one of your favorites so far? Feel free to DM me on any of our social media pages or email us at revisionistalmanac@yahoo.com and let me know. Now that we have my top 10 watches of the year done, let's look ahead to the next 3 months and my top 10 most anticipated films list. At number 10, Boy Kills World, which hits theaters April 26. This is a film by German director Moritz Mohr, who I am completely unfamiliar with. The film stars Bill Skarsgård, who I think is set to have a massive 2024. He has this film, he has The Crow remake, and he has Nosferatu coming out later in the year. Boy Kills World also stars Famke Janssen, who I absolutely love. Now, Skarsgård plays the character Boy, who is deaf, and his whole family has been murdered, and it looks like he goes on a revenge mission to some degree to get those who are responsible for doing what they did. I honestly just really like the look of this poster. I think it's frenetic looking, it's hyper looking, and so my anticipation of this film is almost solely based on the idea of the poster and the cast list. We move up to number 9 on my most anticipated list, which is The Garfield Movie, in theaters on May 24th. Is everyone else really ready for another animated feature with Chris Pratt doing voice work for the lead character? I just hope this doesn't draw as much attention as the Super Mario Brothers did, even though, honestly, I think he did okay with that voice work. The Garfield Movie has a solid-looking cast. It's got Sam Jackson, Ving Rhames, Nicholas Holt, and there's no way in hell this movie's going to be worse than the 2004 version with Bill Murray. My kids are excited about this. We've seen the trailer multiple times, and so of course I'm excited to go see it with them. Number 8, I've got Sasquatch Sunset, which hits theaters on April 19th. This is a film directed by the Zellner brothers and is a surreal comedy about the life of a family of Sasquatch. It premiered at Sundance in January and has gotten very positive reviews so far. It stars Jesse Eisenberg, who is a 2010 Almanac inductee for his work on The Social Network. And I don't anticipate Sasquatch Sunset making much money necessarily, but I do think it could be a sleeper hit if the right audience finds it. So it ends up at number 8 on my anticipated list. At number 7, we have Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, which hits theaters on May 10th. Yes, there's a reason to be skeptical about this movie. The last trilogy of films is absolutely incredible, in my opinion. There's not a bad one of the bunch. Directed by Rupert Wyatt and Matt Reeves of the three films, they did tremendous work in telling the story of Caesar. I'm concerned about Wes Ball as director. He doesn't instill me with a ton of confidence. He did the Maze Runner films, which I do not think are necessarily that strong. I ultimately think this film is going to come down to the quality of the story and the quality of the visual effects of the apes themselves. Here's hoping that this is in any way as close as the previous three films in terms of quality, and I'll be okay with it. So Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes ends up at number 7 on my list. At number 6, we have Monkey Man, which hits theaters on April 5th. This will be Dev Patel's directorial debut, and he's also pulling double duty as the lead actor. This looks like another in the John Wick-esque style, but I don't necessarily try and write them all off as being bad movies. Just look at Bob Odenkirk's Nobody from a few years ago as proof that the John Wick-esque style can work outside of that world. Monkey Man also has Charlton Copley in it, and I am assuming he's going to be playing the villainous role, which he usually excels at. So I think Monkey Man has a lot of potential, which puts it at number 6. Moving up to number 5, and the film If, which hits theaters on May 17th. If, or Imaginary Friends, is John Krasinski's latest directorial feature. It also stars a bankable, reliable lead actor in Ryan Reynolds, who has charisma for days. This looks like it has mass appeal written all over it, and it also, from the trailer, doesn't seem to be too dumbed down. My kids were in love with what they saw in the trailer. They've been asking me ever since when we're going to go see it, and I think this should be a great late spring family movie and do incredibly well from a financial standpoint. At number 4 on my most anticipated list is the film Challengers, which hits theaters on April 26th. This will be the next film from director Luca Guadagnino, his last being 2022's Bones and All. He has a very eclectic filmography with things like Call Me By Your Name and also his Suspiria remake that he made a few years ago. Challengers appears to center around a love triangle between three tennis stars played by Zendaya, Mike Feist, and Josh O'Connor, respectively. I think all three actors are tremendous. Zendaya having a big year right now with Doom Part 2. Mike Feist, I wish we'd seen him more in recent stuff. I think what he did in West Side Story was excellent. And Josh O'Connor obviously was tremendous on his work on The Crown. This looks to be a hot and steamy movie from the trailer I saw. I like all three actors. I'm a tennis fan myself, so this kind of ticks all the boxes for me. I know the film got delayed quite a bit. It was supposed to come out in late 2023. I'm curious if the April release window is going to affect it positively or negatively, because it certainly felt like this movie could have generated awards buzz last year, and April is not traditionally the time of year when a movie does well the following year at the Oscars. At number three on my list is The Fall Guy, which hits theaters May 3rd. The Ryan Gosling hype train continues to gain steam after last year's Barbie smash success and his live performance of I'm Just Ken at the Oscars a few weeks ago. This film has Gosling playing a stuntman who got out of the business and somehow gets pulled back in Godfather 3 style. I think it's got a very cool concept from what I've seen, and it's sure to feature some insane stunt work and action sequences throughout the film. You also have Emily Blunt, Aaron Taylor-Johnson, and Hannah Waddingham, who round out the rest of the main cast, which adds to my general excitement about the film. This movie might just kick off the quote-unquote summer blockbuster window, albeit a little early, and I think it could be a massive box office hit with the star power that's involved. At number two on my most anticipated list is Civil War, which hits theaters on April 12th. This is the latest film from acclaimed writer and director Alex Garland. It follows his 2022 film Men, which was a disappointment for most of his fan base by all accounts. I thought Men was an interesting one-time watch, but it's easily his least impressive work. I do hope this is a true return to form for Garland, and this can stack up right alongside Ex Machina, Annihilation, and 28 Days Later. The early reviews at South by Southwest in mid-March were off the charts, so I'm hopeful that it's going to be as great as everyone else seems to say it is, but when I see that many glowing early reviews, I also try to get a little bit guarded just to be safe. Civil War does feature Kirsten Dunst and Jesse Plemons in prominent roles, both of which are actors who I'm a huge fan of, and I think that they tend to be selective with the projects they pick, which gives me a little more hope that this movie is going to do great things. All signs point to this being high on my favorites list for the first half of the year. And at number one on my most anticipated movies of Q2 is Furiosa, a Mad Max saga, which hits theaters May 24th. Mad Max Fury Road was the biggest surprise of the entire 21st century for me so far. It currently sits in my top 10 favorite movies ever. I think it's the most perfect action film of all time. So yeah, I'm pretty excited to see Miller return to this universe, get more insane and more over the top with the action, and take a deeper dive into Furiosa's story. I think Anya Taylor-Joy taking on the lead role from Charlize Theron is tremendous. I expect it to be a seamless transition as both are exquisite actors. And the film also has Chris Hemsworth playing a villain named Dementis. So I expect him to go full ham on this in the best possible way. Now, I've intentionally avoided all of the trailers for this film, and I know I've heard people say some of the CGI in those trailers doesn't look great, but I'm going to reserve all of my judgment until I'm in the theater, in an IMAX, watching it for the first time. Are you looking forward to any of these movies on my list? Do you agree or disagree with what I have there? Am I missing one of your most anticipated films? Feel free to DM me on any of our social media pages or email us at revisionistalmanac@yahoo.com and let me know. That's going to do it for this episode, but I will be releasing one of these on a quarterly basis, so be on the lookout for those over the rest of 2024. We'll see you later.